You're listening to Innovation for Alpha, where we explore everything at the intersection of healthcare innovation and finance. Through our discussions and interviews, we keep you informed and educated about healthcare innovations, next-level venture investing, and everything involving the combination of the two.
Hello, everybody. This is Tobin Arthur, your host for Innovation for Alpha, and I am joined by a very special guest today, Dr. David Jacoby, who is a cardiac surgeon based in Israel. He has got incredible experience working with innovation, startups, industry. So we're going to have a fun conversation and talk a little bit about innovation and cross-border issues. But Dr. Jacoby, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
This will be fun. Why don't you just start by giving us a sense of your background, maybe your training and some of your experiences to date.
So I'm a cardiac surgeon, adult as well as pediatric. I've been doing it for quite a while now. Maybe I'll start from the end. 2019, being a senior cardiac surgeon in a very busy hospital here in Israel, obviously operating adult as well as pediatric cases, ECMO service, oncologic thoracic surgery. I just decided with myself that I want to spend more time with my family, something that most of the cardiac surgeons cannot afford to themselves. So I started my own exploration of the medtech and the digital health industries. I met hundreds of companies, starting from Israel, then Eastern Europe, Western Europe, US, Canada, India, China, even Australia. And I realized that at that time, in 2019, my knowledge about basic terms like brainstorming, proof of concept, R&D, IP, regulation, sales, fundraising, it was quite poor at that time. Because the only thing I knew about in the hospital was the end product. I used to get the end product. I used to call my purchasing manager. He would ask me, David, is it a must or is it a nice to have? And obviously my answer was always, okay, it's a must. But you know, I had to be convincing. Eventually, after meeting all these companies, I had enough courage. I say courage because the hospital is a nice golden cage, but it's a cage. And you know, I had my nice salary. I had a little ego. So I left the hospital. Currently, I'm operating, but mainly in the private sector in very small volumes. But my main activity, I'm consulting to digital health and medtech companies, especially from the structural heart field, but also electrophysiology, coronary artery disease, ICU. By the way, I'm an ICU physician, at least as much as a cardiac surgeon, emergency medicine, some digital health projects. I'm also an external expert for one of the notified bodies in Germany. And I'm also involved in some projects that deal mainly with really, really early stage innovation. So I'm really satisfied from the decision I've made, and I'm really happy to talk with you guys.
Well, that's a really interesting background and unique in many ways, because you made the decision to back off, like you said, for lots of reasons. You've made this work. Before we go back a little bit further, why don't you just talk about your experience then over the last couple of years? As you went on this educational journey, you started doing more and more consulting. What are some of the things that you've learned and observed? Maybe a couple of highlights in that.
Yeah, so actually when I just started doing this exploration, I was still operating. And, you know, I was sitting with some CEOs and they would ask me, David, you know what? We need a guy like you, but what do you want to do? And, you know, I was embarrassed. I mean, what do you mean what I want to do? You know, who am I? You have my CV. You know, we just talked about it. What do you mean what I want to do? Please tell us, what do you want to do? What like ignites your imagination? And this question, this CEO was not the only one that asked this question. I got this question several times from several CEOs. And then I realized that as a physician in the medtech industry or in the digital health industry, you have to bring an added value. You have to say, what do you want to do? What kind or how can you make the company you are working for, you are working with, or you are part of being better? And it's very important to understand that as a physician, you cannot confine yourself solely to the medical or the clinical part. you have to be a good business development. You have to be a good ambassador for the company you are working for. Why? Because for physicians, sometimes it's easier to open doors. Once you open the door for sales, for fundraising, for some strategic partnerships, from there, it's easier for the other executives to take over. And I really think that this is something that we as physicians in this industry, we must do. So this is one thing that I really wanted to emphasize.
That's incredibly well said. I couldn't emphasize everything that you just said more. The doors that you're able to open because of your credentials, your experience, are something that a layperson like myself or an entrepreneur just can't open. And so the more physicians understand that, the more they really tap into their value. Let me just touch a little bit on your observations, because you're in a unique position in Israel, which is a very innovative country. A lot of innovation comes out of Israel, particularly relative to its size. Compare a little bit your observations, say, between Israel and what you see in Europe, what you see in the US. What are some of the differences between those different markets?
So I'll start from a topic which is kind of usually people are embarrassed to talk about. Fundraising. Obviously, most of the startups, they fail. They fail not because the idea was bad, or the unmet clinical need did not exist, or the CEO did something wrong. No, usually because there was no enough luck. And sometimes it's a matter of timing. Sometimes you have to come to the correct or the proper VC angel or someone that will promote the company and will take it to the next step. Sometimes it's a matter of creating a nice slide deck. Sometimes it's about when do you come to this particular VC, and you have to know what to say, because this VC wants to hear that we did this and that in our preclinical studies, in our animal studies. Some VCs, they put a huge emphasis on the market part. Some of them want you to be really good in regulation and so on. And obviously you cannot be good in everything, because early stage startups, you know, usually the CEOs are not that experienced, because, you know, the more seasoned CEOs, they go and they get these nice positions in the larger companies that already have, let's say, 20 to 100 employees and so on. And in Israel, we are unique in the fact that the government, actually, there is an authority called the Innovation Authority. And this authority, actually, they partner with some medtech or digital health hubs. And actually, this governmental money is invested within this company. And actually, they don't want much, you know, I don't know actually the exact terms, but they don't want much, because actually they believe that even if the company fails, the knowledge will remain in Israel. They do put an emphasis on the fact that if you want to get some contractors, so it's better for you to pay this money within Israel. So you want to pay for a delivery system manufacturer, you want to pay for a physician, you want to pay for some, I don't know, molding and stuff, it's better to pay in Israel. The model is the following. So the government brings 85% of the money. Immediately, I'll tell the exact amount. And this medtech hub, they bring 15% of the money. And then actually the total amount is around, let's say, $700,000 or $800,000 for 2 to 3 years. This money should be enough to achieve some milestones. These milestones are determined by the same innovation authority. And once you reach these milestones, actually you are ready to approach some VCs, and you are ready to get your, you know, it's controversial. Some would call it a Series A, some would call it seed money. But anyway, you are ready to ask for your 4, 5, 6, or $10 million. So this is very nice on one hand. On the other hand, in Israel, the fact that it's really crowded, so there are a lot of ideas, a lot of entrepreneurs, a lot of companies, it's harder to get this Series A round. I think that from my knowledge, or I'm familiar with quite a large number of companies in Europe, I think that raising funds in Europe, it's a bit easier. In the US, it really depends, because in the US, there are obviously some VCs, but in the US, I think that also there are a lot of ideas, but sometimes I think that they did not do the correct market research before this idea came up. On the other hand, in the US, there are a lot of angels. So it's easier to find the first, let's say, $200,000, $400,000, $600,000, but then something gets stuck. And with $200,000, it's really, it's hard. It's difficult to achieve milestones. You cannot perform animal studies. You cannot approach to regulatory bodies. So I think that it's a double-edged sword. On one hand, when it's easier to get money, you do things, you get a lot of confidence. But on the other hand, you have to get this substantial amount in order to get some good, very good employees, in order to proceed with your regulatory thing, in order to perform, obviously, your preclinical and sometimes some first-in-human trials. So it really depends on the company, and it really, really depends on the board of the company. Sometimes they put guys in the board that they have a lot of experience. They did already one or two acquisitions or exits. And I think that these guys, they have a lot of added value. Also, sometimes ideas come from entrepreneurs that are not physicians. Usually they are not physicians. Sometimes they have some background in biomedical engineering. Sometimes they have background in some, I would say, paramedical field. But I think that it's really important to incorporate a physician that comes from the same field, into the company, even as a part-time consultant or just, you know, just someone in the scientific advisory board, just because it's very important for this physician to always to communicate with the engineers, with the software engineers, with it's really important because the input or the feedback that the physician can get, and also vice versa, the physician is getting from the engineers, I think that it's really, really valuable. Because talking only on the C-level, on the executive level, it's nice. But at the end of the day, someone has to tailor the device. Someone has to actually sue it, or someone has to do something with it. So that's my perspective about it. Definitely, there are differences between Israel, Europe, US, and there are also some other scenes like Asia and you know, Chinese market. Obviously, we can talk about it as well.
Sure. Now, again, great perspectives. Tell me a little bit about your goals as you move forward. You kind of indicated that at some point you may want to take some of your own innovations to market. But as you think through, now let's just look at the next 12 to 24 months, so a near-term lens. What are your objectives when you balance your advisory work, maybe in the startup space, working with industry, and then maybe starting to pursue some of your own ideas? How do you think about all of that as well as surgery?
So as said before, I have maybe 15 or 20 unmet clinical needs that I bring from my time in the hospital. For some of them, I have a solution or a partial solution. And I'm definitely looking for some business personnel, for some technology guys that would partner with me. Looking for these guys, obviously, I can find them in a couple of hours. That's not a problem. You know, LinkedIn is always there. But you want to find the individuals that you already work with or you worked for, guys that you trust them, that you know their mindset, that mm-hmm. they know how to take something from point A to point B. You don't want to waste your great idea, something that you thought about, with someone that you don't even know. And it's not only about, you know, that he will, you know, steal my idea or something like that. You just don't want him or her to jeopardize your idea, to take it to the wrong direction. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, sometimes I had three or four ideas that I had it in my mind for 10 or 15 years, but someone else also thought about it. And they actually opened the company, and they, you know, they have an IP. So again, it's a double-edged sword, and you always have to be really realistic about. So one of the best ways, and this is a very important thing, is to always to keep, to maintain, and to develop your network. And your network is not only about, you know, I know someone in Denver, Colorado. No, it's people that you are in intimate relationship with, people that you drink coffee with, people that you, you know, eat with them, you have lunch with them, people that you trust, okay, that you are comfortable enough to talk about your ideas and you are sure that no one is going to steal it from you. This is very important because at the end of the day, we are all humans. We cannot behave like robots. And sometimes you share your idea with someone and this someone can tell you, oh, you know what? I know a company that did the same, but they failed. And sometimes this guy knows why this company failed. Because the management was bad, because the IP was, because they failed to perform the clinical trials and they took it for a third world country and, you know, the clinical trials failed. So it's networking is really, really important and you have to create some sort of family around you. People that behave as your consultants and obviously you are their consultant.
Very well put. Our CTO has a phrase that I think aligns very well with what you just said. He says, your network is your net worth. And he talks about how there's nothing more valuable than those connections that you're building. Talk a little bit about how you built them. You mentioned LinkedIn, which is obviously a great resource. And AngelMD, you know, in many ways, this community is one all about creating connections. That's why we created it. But what have you done over time to continue to foster and build your own network?
When I just started this exploration I was talking about, I met a physician. And this physician left the hospital 20 years ago. And now he's a very successful executive. He's a president of one of the largest startup companies here in Israel. And he told me, David, you know what? You have to meet some people. And I told him, okay, please give me a list or just make some introductions. He said, no, you go to LinkedIn and you just write to people. You know, you write, you introduce yourself. Most of them are not going to answer. Most of them will just, you know, ignore you. The ones that will actually respond, they are the guys you want to work with. Okay. And you know what? Yesterday, I had an intro meeting, an actual intro meeting. And this intro meeting was an introduction of some other intro meeting, and I could trace it back 1.5 years back. So it was like a seventh or eighth generation of an intro meeting that one led to the other. And just imagine, you talk about these individuals, you share experience, you share your thoughts. This is really, really valuable. Because I think that when someone introduces you to someone else, it's got a huge value.
I love that. That's great advice.
And also, you know, someone drops you a message. You say, David, do you know someone in Israel? You know, you don't have to be always a finder or something like that, or, you know, to ask for 5% or something. No, you just do the introduction. You know, it comes back to you like later on.
That's right.
This is very important.
We talk a lot internally with the management team at AngelMD that I would venture to guess 95% of what we do, we don't have any economics tied to those things. We just do it to sow seeds, believing that over time you reap what you sow. And sometimes they come back to benefit us. Sometimes it's just to benefit the community. But in the end, we want to see people be successful, regardless of whether we have anything, you know, connected to that economically. Talk a little bit about, if you would, startups that you advise. You mentioned some of the things which I think were spot on in terms of the value add, just a little bit procedurally. And I'm thinking about physicians that don't have a lot of experience working with startups. How do you go about this? Do you wait for them to say, Dr. Jacoby, here's something we're working on? Or do you set up regular discussions so that you've got some structure? Or is each one different? How do you approach it?
Every and each company is totally different. The CEO is different. The company is different because sometimes both companies are early stage, But one company, you have a CEO with 20 years of experience in the industry, hands-on experience. The other company has got a CEO which is relatively young. So you cannot say the same thing about both companies. You also have to understand what is the DNA of the company. And I'm going back to the thing I just said before. What can I bring to the company? Sometimes one of the founders of the company is a physician. So you cannot be the chief medical officer of this company or the VP medical or the VP clinical. So you have to incorporate yourself into a position like being some kind of eligibility committee or a monitor or something like that. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, some companies want you to escort their R&D processes, which is really important because sometimes the founder is a biomedical engineer. The team is a great team. There is a business, there is a very, very good business plan, but the appreciation of the tissues and how their device, okay, let's talk about an intravascular device, class 3 intravascular device. Once you put you this device, how do the radial forces of the device influence the native tissue? How do I anticipate the longevity of this device? What do I think about issues of anticoagulation? What do I think about issues of the potential of this device to cause arrhythmias? How disruptive do I think that the device is? How would other physicians accept this device? And obviously, these questions can be answered only by someone that was in the operating room, was in the cath labs, attended these hard team meetings. This is very important. Mm. And sometimes, you know, the feedback can be just, you know, within 30 minutes. You don't have to sit with them for you know, 2 years in order to express your thoughts and, you know, to be meaningful for the company.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of that, when you think about your colleagues, how have they embraced this shift, this transition in your role? Do you find, you know, as an adjunct to that question, that physicians in Israel tend to be more entrepreneurial or less than you observe, say, in the US or in Israel or in Europe, or all pretty similar? In other words, are they mostly sitting there thinking about how to make things better, faster, cheaper, or are they just going about their business?
Yeah, you know, I don't want to discourage the young generation from actually going into studying medicine, but I think that this profession is a really problematic one. Mm. Because I think that the motivation that drives us to assist the community, to help some poor individuals, people that are suffering, people that suffer from cardiovascular disease, cancer, and so on. This drive, I think, that is sometimes is abused by the general community or the general population.
Yeah.
And this same drive that we have, it embraces us or it hugs us in a way that we are really scared to leave our positions because we have I call it a nice salary. Obviously, you know, physicians usually are not rich, at least in Israel, but we have a nice salary. We have our prestige in the hospital. Mm-hmm. And this way, somehow you are led from being a 18-year-old, you know, enthusiastic guy that wants to study medicine and you do your best. And you find yourself at the age of 67 or 70 being, you know, almost, you know, pre-retirement. And you realize that you spend your time in the hospital and you don't have any other experiences. And you are hearing stories about, you know, Michael DeBakey and Denton Cooley and about these big surgeons and so on. But what did I do in order to bring my ideas? Why did this surgeon had these ideas and was skilled enough or motivated enough in order to implement them? And he was actually a pioneer. And why did I only, you know, open the chest, put the patient on a cardiopulmonary bypass, did, you know, this bypass surgery or aortic replacement or valve replacement, I closed the, you know, revived the heart, closed the chest, and I went home. So why was I that, you know, dogmatic? The answer is that in our world, people are really skeptic. When you think about something, usually if you sit with your friends, they usually tell you, oh, someone probably thought about it before. No, that this should not be the approach. And even if you are convinced that someone actually thought about it before, you have to check, what did this someone do with his idea? Second, and if he was not successful, and most of them are not successful, why he was not successful? The third, maybe you can do the same, but you can do it on the better way. So this is really important to study from mistakes of others. I think that in Israel, physicians, they really want to be innovative, but I think that most of them, they don't have enough courage to leave the hospital, to leave their practices and actually do only innovation. But I want to tell you, the physicians that actually did it, that left the hospital and dealt only with innovation, they were really successful.
There's a saying that reflects what you were referring to, and they say that physicians have golden handcuffs. And the golden handcuffs are, like you said, it's a prestigious role, it pays pretty well. And so it's very tough to leave that, particularly after having committed so many years to training.
Exactly.
But you're right. There are so many opportunities out there. And partly what we're working to do inside the Angel MD community is expose all of those entrepreneurial activities, because everybody's going to be different. They're going to have different things that interest them. And our chief medical officer is a good example. He has blended his time. Half of it he spends with industry consulting larger organizations, and then the other half with startups. And that's a really interesting blend, because on the one hand, industry, they have budgets, they have cash, they can afford to pay physicians for their advice and their expertise. On the other hand, startups have a lot of promise. It's exciting, there's energy, and they have equity. And if those companies go well, and in many cases, that's because the physicians helped them, then there's a lot of financial benefit to that as well. Okay. I'm very excited about having you involved and getting to know you more. So many of the things you're talking about are really clearly aligned with what we're working on. You may know we're launching an educational program called Angel MD Academy. And it's exactly what you were talking about earlier. So many physicians want to participate in this, but they're not even sure where to start. Even some of the language that's used, as you mentioned, raising capital, Series A, seed round, et cetera, even just these things intimidate people because it's not the language they speak. But it's not hard to learn. It just, we need a resource and a place to come create that common language and then point people in the right direction. Maybe as we close up, are there any things that you would like to share? Maybe from the perspective, one thought for fellow clinicians, and you've shared a bunch already, but maybe something that we've missed, and then maybe one thought for startups and how they can better leverage physicians that are working with them to get the most out of that relationship.
Yeah, I think that most of the physicians that actually work in the hospitals, in the public sector, or they have their own private practice, I think that they have to get involved in one or two companies, at least from the beginning. Sometimes when you look in retrospect, you will be disappointed from yourself. Okay, why did I do it for them? It was a waste of time. But those are the most valuable lessons. Those are the lessons, you know, who to deal with, who you are not dealing with. You know, now I have enough experience. When I just talk, you know, 2 minutes with someone, I already know if this guy is serious or what does he do. I can ask the proper questions in order to direct myself from point A to point B and to actually to understand the DNA of this individual. What does he do? sometimes they have bombastic ideas. And these ideas, you know, it's a huge market. It's a $50 billion market annually, and we are going to sell and this and that. And then you ask a question, and it's like, you know, a pin in the in a balloon, you know. It just, you know, then they don't have the answer. And, you know, the purpose is not, you know, to be bad or strict or harsh with them. The idea is to just see if this individual is prepared to answer your questions. So that's for the physicians. So always get involved in something. This something can be digital health. It can be a medical device that is got is an intimate relationship with your profession. So if it's if you are a nephrologist, so, you know, just go to a medical device that monitors urinary output, or there are some great technologies now of stem cell implantation for some kidney diseases and so on. On the other hand, for startups, I do realize that most of the startups, they are running on a very, very low amount of fuel. And I do realize that these startups cannot afford themselves to keep a physician as a full-timer. But it's really important to have a physician, at least 5, 10, 20 hours a month, in order to always to escort these R&D processes. This is very important because early stage startups, in contrast to companies like Edwards or Abbott or Boston Scientific or Medtronic, they have only one time chance. You have a one time chance to perform preclinical studies and large animal studies. You may also have one chance to perform actually first in human or early feasibility studies. If you fail, the company is closed. So that's very important to allocate the correct funds, the correct resources towards having a physician that actually sits with you and can say, okay, stop, guys, okay? Let's wait for 1 month. Let's refine our activities and let's do it in a better manner. This is very important.
These are great pieces of advice. On your former point to physicians, I had a conversation years ago with a very smart investor. And he shared with me that when he talks to a startup and he's asking them questions, he doesn't expect to find out anything or ask them something that they don't already know. He said, what I'm really looking for is to see how they think and how they articulate the answers and to see if they're self-aware enough to know what they don't know. He said, because I don't expect them to know everything. If they did, the problem would have already been solved. What I expect them to know is here's the set of experiments that we need to run in order to get to the right answers. And I thought that was a very interesting approach to how you deal with startups. Well, Dr. Jacoby, this has been a real pleasure, a fun start to our conversation. I look forward to many more. You have got great insight. I think it's so important, the things that you've articulated, both for physicians and for startups, for how physicians can really be a big asset to these companies if properly integrated into the process. So again, thank you. And thank you for the time difference too. It also makes it a little challenging because you're doing this late in the evening your time. So appreciate that.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
See you again soon for the next episode of Innovation for Alpha. Make sure to go to Innovation for Alpha for access to prior episode links, show notes, and other valuable resources. This show is for entertainment purposes only. Before making any investment decisions, please consult with a professional. This show is copyrighted by Angel Indie Media, and written permission must be granted before syndication or rebroadcasting.